I would bet that John 3:16 is probably the best known Bible verse in America today. I bet most of you can recite it. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish, but have life everlasting. My baby book claims that I could do that at the age of 4. Apparently, it was the first verse I memorized. And that's not so unsurprising for a child who grew up in the Bible Belt. You see, we got donuts when we recite Bible verses. But even with the donuts, I hated Sunday mornings. I hated getting up early. And the 7:30 group will tell you I still do. I hated getting dressed up. I hated those black leather, patent leather Mary Jane shoes that wore blisters on my feet week in and week out. I hated being constantly reprimanded for wiggling during those long, boring sermons. Those sermons that told me just how bad I was. And because I was so bad, how poor God had to send his only son to die for my sins so I didn't have to burn in hell. But more than anything, I hated altar calls. Singing verse after verse after verse of Sinner Come Home and other such hymns. Waiting for that light bulb to go on somebody's head so another soul could come forward and confess their sins and their belief that Jesus Christ was their personal Lord and Savior. And I remember sitting there hungry, ready to go to the bathroom, debating with myself, really, what would be worse? The fires of hell? Or wandering around those golden streets with a halo listening to angels play the harp? I mean, heaven and hell theology was everywhere. And John 3:16 was right in the middle of it. Everywhere you looked. We wore it on t-shirts. We turned our soda pop cup upside down. It was on the bottom of that. It was painted on water towers, overpasses. You couldn't score a touchdown without seeing it, that's for sure. So I grew up in the church, Sunday mornings, Sunday nights, Wednesday evenings, Friday nights. And yet, when I thought about God, what I thought about was heaven and hell, and fear. And I think that's a travesty. Because when we limit our understanding of the gospel to heaven and hell and fear, we lose the good news. We lose the good news. And unfortunately, over the last 75 years in our country, this voice of the religious right has become the dominant voice of Christianity. And its message has begun to eclipse the beautiful, lovely, loving teachings of Jesus Christ. And so it should not be a surprise to us that our children and our friends and our colleagues actually choose to live in a godless world. But folks, we can't blame all of that on the religious right. Because we have let that voice silence ours. Rather than claiming the good news, we have been driven into the darkness and we're hiding in closets practicing our faith. Our faith has become this personal, private affair. And when we're caught, that moment when somebody all of a sudden realizes the reason you missed the meeting is you went to church, oh my, don't we live in terror of that? And it puts us back on our heels And our response, our defense, is telling. Well, that's not what I believe. Or maybe more frequently, I'm not that kind of Christian. And so the question becomes for us, really, what kind of Christians are we? And what do we believe? Or maybe more to the point, can others tell by the way we live our lives what we believe? Because that's what believe means in the Gospel of John. Believe is a verb. Believe is an action. Belief is our response to God's love, our acceptance of that love, our moving ever deeper into that divine relationship and committing our hearts and our souls and lives to follow Christ. In the Gospel of John, the invitation to believe is an invitation to a life of continual transformation, a life lived in the presence of a loving God. And yet, so often that invitation shows up, it comes to all of us. We open it up, and we don't rush to RSVP. We don't go to the party. We set it on the table, and we let it get lost in the junk mail. Why? Because if we accept that invitation, we risk subjecting ourselves to ridicule and rejection. We ought to make the choice to forego that path to salvation in order to avoid rejection and ridicule. But that wasn't Christ's response. Ridiculed and rejected, the Son of Man was lifted up on the cross, crucified and glorified in the same moment. Crucified and glorified. In that moment, rejection became exaltation. Life triumphed over death. Love conquered fear, and pain and suffering were no more. That's the gift of the cross. The empty cross gives us the faith and the knowledge we need, the strength and the courage to live our belief, to reveal God's love to the world. It assures us that there is not anything, any darkness or pain or evil, suffering that God's love cannot transform. That's what it is to live in the grace of God. We can depend on it. It brought me here. I grew up in a world of hellfire and brimstone. But you see, John 3:16 doesn't end. It doesn't stand alone. It's followed by John 3:17, which says, Jesus came not into the world to condemn it, but to save it. There's always the love. And when we allow ourselves to draw nearer to that love, to move into relationship with that love, to be curious about that love begins to envelop us and hold us and carry us and animate our lives in such a way, in such a profound way, that we can no longer not proclaim it. We can't not affirm the love of God in our lives when we come that close to it. That's all it takes. We have a beautiful story to tell. The Gospel of John is one of the world's greatest love stories. It's the story of God's dream for us. John 3:16 isn't a litmus test for heaven and hell. It's an invitation to wake up and participate in the love that's pulsing through the universe. So isn't it time that we come out of the closet, that we walk out of the darkness, that we began to tell our story and reclaim our faith and redefine for the world what it truly means to be Christian. The world so desperately needs us to come out of the darkness. Not to impose our beliefs, not to defend our beliefs, just to simply live our beliefs. Everywhere we look, the world is crying out for love and wholeness and redemption. Let's face it, the world has condemned itself. We live in a world that has robbed individuals of their voice and their dignity and their daily bread. We live in a world that has literally and figuratively raped women, children, and the earth on which we depend. A world where economic injustice is considered good business. A world that breeds hate and violence and division. We live in a world that needs God's love. A world that needs the love that flows through believers. This is powerful stuff. This is the love that changes lives and changes the world now, not after death, now, today, in Berkeley, in El Cerrito, in San Francisco, in California, in the United States, across the world. That is God's dream for us, to bring that love into the world. And we know that love. You know that love. It's here in our very midst. It's so tangible, you can almost reach out and touch it. You can find it in your joy, in your fellowship, in your commitment to mission and justice. I suspect it's that secret ingredient in the secret sauce of all souls that everyone talks about. Time to take your secret sauce out of the closet, out of the kitchen, out of the church. We don't need to save it for Sundays or special occasions. We're not going to run out. It's time to be prodigal. It's time to get messy. Let's take it home. Let's open it up in the mornings and let's spill it all over our hands and our faces and our shirts and let's wear it out into the world. Let's serve it up every time we dine with someone. Let's give it away freely so that everyone, everywhere, has an opportunity to get a whiff, a taste of God's transforming love. Folks, we have nothing to be ashamed of. We have nothing to be afraid of. When we live our belief, when we reveal God's love, we do not need to defend it or explain it. So this Lent, let it be a journey from darkness into light. Don't come to church and sing the hymn. Walk into the world and lift up the cross. Proclaim the love of God until all the world adores His sacred name. Be bold of heart. Be kind in spirit. Be generous in compassion. In the name of Christ, take bread to the hungry. And balm to the wounded. Give courage to the fearful. A voice to the voiceless. Hope to the dying. And know that through these acts, the world will come to understand, to see the love that comes through believing